Chapter 18. Burgesses, and Freeman, and anybody who has consulted the addresses of the mayor to the Freeman, or the Freeman to the mayor, or both to the corporation, or all three to Parliament, will learn from thence, what they ought to have known before, that Muggleton is an ancient and loyal borough, mingling a zealous advocacy of Christian principles with a devoted attachment to commercial rights. In demonstration whereof, the mayor, corporation, and other inhabitants, have presented at divers times, no fewer than 1,420 petitions against the continuance of Negro slavery abroad, and an equal number against any interference with the factory system at home, 68 in favor of the sale of livings in the church, and 86 for abolishing Sunday trading in the street. Mr. Pickwick stood in the principal street of this illustrious town, and gazed with an air of curiosity, not unmixed with interest, on the objects around him. There was an open square for the marketplace, and in the center of it, a large inn with a signpost in front, displaying an object very common in art, but rarely met with in nature, to wit, a blue lion, with three bow legs in the air, balancing himself on the extreme point of the center claw of his fourth foot. There were, within sight, an auctioneer's and fire agency office, a corn factor's, a linen draper's, a saddler's, a distiller's, a grocer's, and a shoe shop, the last mentioned warehouse being also appropriated to the diffusion of hats, bonnets, wearing apparel, cotton umbrellas, and useful knowledge. There was a red brick house with a small paved courtyard in front, which anybody might have known belonged to the attorney, and there was, moreover, another red brick house with Venetian blinds, and a large brass door plate with a very legible announcement that it belonged to the surgeon. A few boys were making their way to the cricket field, and two or three shopkeepers who were standing at their doors looked as if they should like to be making their way to the same spot, as indeed to all appearance they might have done, without losing any great amount of custom thereby. Mr. Pickwick having paused to make these observations, to be noted down at a more convenient period, hastened to rejoin his friends, who had turned out of the main street, and were already within sight of the field of battle. The wickets were pitched, and so were a couple of marquees for the rest, and refreshment of the contending parties. The game had not yet commenced. Two or three Dingley Dellers, and all Muggletonians, were amusing themselves with a majestic air, by throwing the ball carelessly from hand to hand, and several other gentlemen dressed like them, in straw hats, flannel jackets, and white trousers, a costume in which they looked very much like amateur stonemasons, were sprinkled about the tents, towards one of which Mr. Wardle conducted the party. Several dozen of "How are yous?" hailed the old gentleman's arrival, and a general raising of the straw hats, and bending forward of the flannel jackets, followed his introduction of his guests as gentlemen from London, who were extremely anxious to witness the proceedings of the day, with which, he had no doubt, they would be greatly delighted. "You had better step into the marquee, I think, sir," said one very stout gentleman, whose body and legs looked like half a gigantic roll of flannel, elevated on a couple of inflated pillowcases. "You'll find it much pleasanter, sir," urged another stout gentleman, who strongly resembled the other half of the roll of flannel aforesaid. "You're very good," said Mr. Pickwick. "This way," said the first speaker. "They notch in here, it's the best place in the whole field," and the cricketer, panting on before, preceded them to the tent. "Capital game, smart sport, fine exercise, very," were the words which fell upon Mr. Pickwick's ear as he entered the tent, and the first object that met his eyes was his green-coated friend of the Rochester coach, holding forth, to the no small delight and edification of a select circle of the chosen of all Muggleton. His dress was slightly improved, and he wore boots, but there was no mistaking him. The stranger recognized his friends immediately, and, darting forward and seizing Mr. Pickwick by the hand, dragged him to a seat with his usual impetuosity, talking all the while, as if the whole of the arrangements were under his especial patronage and direction. This way, capital fun, lots of beer hogsheads, rounds of beef bullocks, mustard cart loads, glorious day down with you, make yourself at home, glad to see you very. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick sat down as he was bid, and Mr. Winkle and Mr. Snodgrass also complied with the directions of their mysterious friend. Mr. Wardle looked on in silent wonder. Apostrophe, Mr. Wardle, a friend of mine, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick. Friend of yours? My dear sir, how are you? Friend of my friends, give me your hand, sir. And the stranger grasped Mr. Wardle's hand with all the fervor of a close intimacy of many years, and then stepped back a pace or two, as if to take a full survey of his face and figure, and then shook hands with him again, if possible, more warmly than before. Well, and how came you here? Apostrophe, apostrophe, said Mr. Pickwick, with a smile in which benevolence struggled with surprise. Come, apostrophe, replied the stranger, stopping at Crown at Muggleton met a party, flannel jackets, white trousers, anchovy sandwiches, devil kidney, splendid fellows, glorious. Apostrophe, Mr. Pickwick was sufficiently versed in the stranger's system of stenography to infer from this rapid and disjointed communication that he had, somehow or other, contracted an acquaintance with the All Muggletons, which he had converted, by a process peculiar to himself, into that extent of good fellowship on which a general invitation may be easily founded. His curiosity was therefore satisfied, and putting on his spectacles he prepared himself to watch the play which was just commencing. All Muggleton at the first innings, and the interest became intense, when Mr. Dumkins and Mr. Potter, two of the most renowned members of that most distinguished club, walked, bat in hand, to their respective wickets. Mr. Luffy, the highest ornament of Dingley Dell, was pitched to bowl against the redoubtable Dumkins, and Mr. Struggles was selected to do the same kind office for the hitherto unconquered Potter. Several players were stationed to look out, apostrophe, in different parts of the field, and each fixed himself into the proper attitude by placing one hand on each knee and stooping very much, as if he were making a back for some beginner at leapfrog. All the regular players do this sort of thing. Indeed, it is generally supposed that it is quite impossible to look out properly in any other position. The umpires were stationed behind the wickets, the scorers were prepared to notch the runs, a breathless silence ensued. Mr. Luffy retired a few paces behind the wicket of the passive Potter, and applied the ball to his right eye for several seconds. Dumkins confidently awaited its coming with his eyes fixed on the motions of Luffy. Play! Apostrophe, apostrophe, suddenly cried the bowler. The ball flew from his hand straight and swift towards the center stump of the wicket. The wary Dumkins was on the alert. It fell upon the tip of the bat and bounded far away over the heads of the scouts, who had just stooped low enough to let it fly over them. Run, run, another. Now, then, throw her up with her stop there, another. No, yes, no, throw her up, throw her up. Apostrophe, apostrophe, such were the shouts which followed the stroke, and at the conclusion of which all Muggleton had scored two. Nor was Potter behindhand in earning laurels wherewith to garnish himself and Muggleton. He blocked the doubtful balls, missed the bad ones, took the good ones, and sent them flying to all parts of the field. The scouts were hot and tired, the bowlers were changed and bowled till their arms ached, but Dumkins and Potter remained unconquered. Did an elderly gentleman essay to stop the progress of the ball, it rolled between his legs or slipped between his fingers. Did a slim gentleman try to catch it, it struck him on the nose, and bounded pleasantly off with redoubled violence, while the slim gentleman's eyes filled with water, and his form writhed with anguish. Was it thrown straight up to the wicket, Dumkins had reached it before the ball. In short, when Dumkins was caught out, and Potter stumped out, all Muggleton had notched some 54, while the score of the Dingley Dellers was as blank as their faces. The advantage was too great to be recovered. In vain did the eager Luffy, and the enthusiastic Struggles, do all that skill and experience could suggest, to regain the ground Dingley Dell had lost in the contest. It was of no avail, and in an early period of the winning game Dingley Dell gave in, and allowed the superior prowess of all Muggleton. The stranger, meanwhile, had been eating, drinking, and talking, without cessation. At every good stroke he expressed his satisfaction and approval of the player in a most condescending and patronizing manner, which could not fail to have been highly gratifying to the party concerned. While at every bad attempt at a catch, and every failure to stop the ball, he launched his personal displeasure at the head of the devoted individual in such denunciations as stupid now, butterfingers muff humbug, and so forth, ejaculations which seemed to establish him in the opinion of all around, as a most excellent and undeniable judge of the whole art and mystery of the noble game of cricket. Capital game, well played, some strokes admirable, apostrophe, said the stranger, as both sides crowded into the tent, at the conclusion of the game. You have played it, sir? ? Inquired Mr. Wardle, who had been much amused by his loquacity. Played it? Think I have thousands of times not here. West Indies exciting thing, hot work very. ? It must be rather a warm pursuit in such a climate, ? Observed Mr. Pickwick. Warm, red hot, scorching, glowing. Played a match once, single wicket friend the Colonel Sir Thomas Blazo, who should get the greatest number of runs. Won the toss first inning 7 o'clock a.m. 6 natives, to look out went in. Kept in Edenton's natives all fainted, taken away fresh half dozen ordered fainted also Blazo bowling supported by 2 natives. Couldn't bowl me out fainted to clear the way the colonel wouldn't give in faithful attendant Quanko Samba last man left sun so hot, bat in blisters. Ball scorched round 570 runs rather exhausted Quanko mustered up last remaining strength bowled me out at a bath, and went out to dinner. ? And what became of what's his name, sir? ? Inquired an old gentleman. Blazo? ? No, the other gentleman. ? Quanko Samba? ? Yes, sir. ? Poor Quanko never recovered it, bowled on my account, bowled off, on his own died, sir. ? Here the stranger buried his countenance in a brown jug, but whether to hide his emotion or imbibe its contents, we cannot distinctly affirm. We only know that he paused suddenly, drew a long and deep breath, and looked anxiously on, as 2 of the principal members of the Dingley Dell Club approached Mr. Pickwick, and said, "We are about to partake of a plain dinner at the Blue Lion, sir. We hope you and your friends will join us." ? Of course, ? said Mr. Wardle, among our friends we include Mr. ? And he looked towards the stranger. Jingle, ? said that versatile gentleman, taking the hint at once. Jingle Alfred Jingle Esquire of No Hall, Nowhere. ? I shall be very happy, I am sure, ? said Mr. Pickwick. So shall I, ? said Mr. Alfred Jingle, drawing one arm through Mr. Pickwick's, and another through Mr. Wardle's, as he whispered confidentially in the ear of the former gentleman. Devilish good dinner cold, but capital peeped into the room this morning, fowls and pies, and all that sort of thing, pleasant fellows these well behaved, to vary. ? There being no further preliminaries to arrange, the company straggled into the town in little knots of 2s and 3s, and within a quarter of an hour, were all seated in the great room of the Blue Lion Inn, Muggleton Mr. Dumkins acting as chairman, and Mr. Luffy officiating as vice. There was a vast deal of talking and rattling of knives and forks, and plates, a great running about of 3 ponderous-headed waiters, and a rapid disappearance of the substantial viands on the table, to each and every of which item of confusion, the facetious Mr. Jingle lent the aid of 6 ordinary men at least. When everybody had eaten as much as possible, the cloth was removed, bottles, glasses, and dessert were placed on the table, and the waiters withdrew to clear away, or in other words, to appropriate to their own private use and emolument, whatever remnants of the eatables and drinkables they could contrive to lay their hands on. Amidst the general hum of mirth and conversation that ensued, there was a little man with a puffy, "Say nothing to me, or I'll contradict you" sort of countenance, who remained very quiet, occasionally looking round him when the conversation slackened, as if he contemplated putting in something very weighty, and now and then bursting into a short cough of inexpressible grandeur. At length, during a moment of comparative silence, the little man called out in a very loud solemn voice, "Apostrophe Mr. Luffy!" Apostrophe apostrophe, everybody was hushed into a profound stillness as the individual addressed replied, "Sir." Apostrophe apostrophe, "I wish to address a few words to you, sir, if you will entreat the gentlemen to fill their glasses." Apostrophe, Mr. Jingle uttered a patronizing "here, here," apostrophe which was responded to by the remainder of the company, and the glasses having been filled, the vice president assumed an air of wisdom in a state of profound attention, and said, "Apostrophe Mr. Staple." "Apostrophe, sir, apostrophe," said the little man, rising, "I wish to address what I have to say to you, and not to our worthy chairman, because our worthy chairman is in some measure, I may say in a great degree, the subject of what I have to say, or I may say to apostrophe state," apostrophe suggested Mr. Jingle. "Yes, to state," apostrophe said the little man, "I thank my honorable friend, if he will allow me to call him so, for ears, and one certainly from Mr. Jingle, for the suggestion. Sir, I am a Deller, a Dingley Deller, cheers. I cannot lay claim to the honor of forming an item in the population of Muggleton. Nor, sir, I will frankly admit, do I covet that honor. And I will tell you why, sir, here, to Muggleton I will readily concede all these honors, and distinctions to which it can fairly lay claim, they are too numerous." Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.